time the powder was delivered, Krugel had in his house the remaining components needed to make the bomb. All of the bomb components were seized during the execution of a search warrant at Krugel's house following the delivery of the explosive powder. Rubin and Krugel were both arrested at their homes last night by members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Both defendants are scheduled to make their initial appearance today in federal court at 2 p.m.
The Jewish Defense League was originally formed in 1968 by Rabbi Meir Kahane to mount an armed response to anti-Semitic acts in New York. The JDL gained notoriety when its members were linked to bombings, most of them aimed at Soviet targets in retaliation for the way that country treated its Jewish population. Kahane left the organization in the 1980s and a power struggle ensued, with Irvin David Rubin among the contenders for leadership. Rubin has made a career out of confrontation. By his own count, he has been arrested more than 40 times, and in 1980 he was tried and found innocent of soliciting the murders of suspected Nazis in the U.S. Gordon says Rubin's arrest should serve as a clear warning to anyone trying to use religious faith as a justification for violent acts.
Not long after the September 11 terrorist attacks, I announced my office's promise to vigorously prosecute hate crimes and urged the residents of this community not to resort to religious or political terrorism in the aftermath of September 11. Last night's arrest confirmed that we meant what we said. If you cross the line from expressing your political or religious beliefs to committing violent acts against those whose beliefs are offensive to you, then you will likely end up facing federal prosecution on charges carrying extremely long prison sentences.
Rubin and Krugel are currently being held in federal custody. No date has been set yet for their trials. For WBAI News, I'm Ginger Otis.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI Pacifica Radio in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. It's 8:02 in the morning. In local news, after meeting with New Jersey Governor-elect James McGreevy, Mayor Rudolph Giuliani says he's not concerned if some companies move to New Jersey after the World Trade Center attack. Giuliani says some companies will come back and some won't, but others will develop. McGreevy said his state would not use the September 11th attack on the Trade Center to lure businesses to the other side of the Hudson River. He says everyone has an interest in the rebuilding of the financial district. McGreevy and Giuliani also discussed security issues at the region's ports, airports, bridges, and tunnels managed by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Giuliani is a longtime critic of the Port Authority. He again called for the privatization of the three international airports that the agency operates. McGreevy said the relationship should be reexamined, but he stopped short of agreeing with Giuliani. And Rochelle Park doesn't plan to take further action against a nightclub where a portable dance floor collapsed last month. Township officials said yesterday that the Metro Lounge and its landlord, the Ramada Inn, have agreed to comply with building codes. They'll also be more careful about occupancy limits at the club. 50 people were hurt when the dance floor collapsed November 25th, sending patrons into a swimming pool beneath the floor. The room where the collapse occurred has been closed since then because the club's certificate of occupancy was revoked. And the city has canceled the annual New Year's Eve fireworks show in Central Park because of safety concerns. A police spokesman says the New York Roadrunners Club will not be allowed to end its four-mile race this year with its traditional fireworks display. The race is in its 23rd year. Jake LaSala is the race's organizer. He says canceling the fireworks is very disappointing, but that you can never be too sure these days. And finally, all 3-year-old Taylor Connolly wanted for Christmas was to see his dad again. And thanks to Santa Claus, he got his wish yesterday. When Taylor opened up a big box, he found his dad, Navy Petty Officer Second Class Wayne Connolly, sitting inside. The elder Connolly had been in Iceland for 4 months and had returned home that day. Ray Beasley, who plays Santa at the Wayne Town Center, learned about Taylor's wish from his grandmother. When Beasley found out Connolly was coming home, he quickly arranged the surprise. Says Beasley, this is the best job in the world, and the look on Taylor's face proves it. I'm Paul DiRienzo for the BAI News Department. It's 47 degrees, going up to 50 raining degrees in New York City. Back to Santiago Nieves and WBAI this morning.
Thanks a lot, Paul. 8:04 in the morning it is, and 47 degrees it is. A few notes today. Public transportation is the best way to go. Everyone reports that it's pretty much normal today. If you're going out there by car, it is gridlock, they say, throughout the metropolitan New York and tri-state area. So remember that before you get going. And if you're just one person, you shouldn't be riding in your car anyway, right?
Well, at least through the tunnel, at through the bridge.
Otherwise, as I said, two other very BAI alternatives, which are bicycles and defeat. the agony of defeat.
The agony of defeat.
8:05 in the morning. We have coming up, hopefully, we're having a little difficulty. We admit to you getting technically the mayor. We can admit that when we know it's not on our side, when it's the phone company. But we are trying to get Mayor Serrano of Vieques, Puerto Rico, with us this morning live to talk about his arrest and about imperialism in this new global economy. And a lot more. Also joining us live in the studios a bit later is John Liu, the first Asian American elected to the city council. It is rather shocking. What is that going to mean for New York? 8:05 in the morning. This is WBAI This Morning, Pacifica Radio in New York. We're at 99.5 FM. By the way, if you're not within our broadcast area, you're not listening to me, I guess. Can't hear it. But
unless you're on the internet.
Unless you're on the internet. But you already know what I'm going to say, however. But if you're listening and you don't know that we're on the internet and you think that only you can hear us and you want to turn others on to WBAI Radio, be it the morning show or all of us, we're here 24/7. Log on to WBAI.org, www.WBAI.org. A lot of W's there. 8:06 in the morning, take a short break. We'll be right back on WBAI This Morning again. 8:06, 47 drizzly degrees. Stay with us. Trying to get Damaso Serrano, the mayor of Vieques, on the line, and he is in Vieques, Puerto Rico. Paul, I just thought we'd pick up a little bit here until we do that. Of course, you'll be back with the news at 8:55 and 9:55. We're out of here till 10 o'clock in the morning. This is WBI This Morning, and it is Thursday, December 13th. The only paper we didn't mention this morning, by the way, was Newsday when you had walked in, and their front page is on the bus attack. Israelis on deadly bus attack were through with Arafat. They're vowing a crackdown, and they're cutting their ties with the Palestinian leader after the ambush. An ambush has killed 10, which is, to a great extent, I guess, what they were looking for, although it certainly seems that Sharon kind of pretty much made that very clear.
I don't know what they mean. I mean, you know, to me, it's like war on the Taliban. It's a ridiculous concept since we created the Taliban. We basically demobilized them, and they collapsed pretty quickly once we yanked our support and started bombing them. So, to attack Arafat, to make war on Arafat, I mean, he's totally a puppet and a creation of the Israeli state. So what are they going to do, like yank the rug out from under him and then put somebody else in there, I guess, you know? But who's there's nobody credible who is an activist who supports the Israeli point of view and the Palestinian community. So are they going to tell us that they're going to, like, bomb them or something and start bombing the West Bank?
You know, I was just thinking, sticking with...
They're doing that, I guess, right?
Yeah, general issues of the war, and right here back home again, the suspected terrorist, Zacharias Moussaoui. I was just wondering, court today, how many people are going to appear in support of him.
Oh.
And feel that they're going to leave in any way unchecked for the rest of their lives.
Well,
Think about that?
I'm sure. You know what? Who will be there? It'll be the...
Jewish Defense League.
No, yeah, right. Protesting. Yeah.
Sorry about that. What a vulgar joke.
Moussaoui absolutely maintains his innocence.
Yes, I know. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And firmly maintains his innocence.
Yeah. I heard Ron Kuby, our friend and lawyer, say that as far as he's concerned, and I saw just a very short clip of it, can't tell you anymore except to say that I know he feels that the proof isn't there with bin Laden. And there are many law experts that say, of course, it's not there.
No, they have nothing.
So enter the videotape, which they're expecting to release today. What do you think is on that videotape?
No, they're
today?
Saying now you can't understand the audio and they can't translate it properly.
Well, I heard just before I left the house said that what they're doing is they're making clear that the translation is absolutely correct. The term, as I read, that they had the most difficulty with was poodlehead.
Can you translate poodlehead into Arabic?
How
do you say poodle head in the 160 mutually unintelligible languages of Afghanistan?
The crux of it being that the man is gloating.
Right.
Gloating.
I'm sure, it's tragic that people would gloat over such a horrific disaster as the World Trade Center, but the United States these days is held in such low esteem in so many places. I'm sure there are millions of people who are gloating, and I guess under the new Bush doctrine, Bush Jr. doctrine, the Shrub doctrine, we'll like bomb the hell out of them, find them all, and throw them in jail, and execute them for daring to gloat.
How dare they gloat? Okay, what else do we have in today's news today?
Well, I think there's a number of top stories. I mean, I think an interesting story that came out of the entertainment pages is the young actor who appeared in the Oprah Winfrey movie was murdered. Sometimes art imitates life, and other times life mocks art. That sadly has become the case for a young man who appeared in a TV movie with Oprah Winfrey. In the 1993 movie There Are No Children Here, Mark Lane Jr. portrayed a young man who overcame the lure of gang life with the help of his mom, played by Winfrey. Unfortunately, in real life, the lure of the streets proved too strong for Lane. Police in Chicago say he was shot to death in a gang-related murder 2 days before Thanksgiving. He was shot several times while driving a car on Chicago's west side, you know, a place I've been in. I've lived in Chicago, and I know it can be it's a very poor, desolate, far from downtown area, West Chicago, where the ghettos of that city are located and where there's a lot of gang activity, a lot of poverty, a lot of hopelessness. Lane was 22. He got the role over more than 1,000 youngsters who went out for the part. In a 1993 interview, Lane said he wanted to join the ROTC, become a lawyer, and keep acting. But it didn't turn out quite that way. Court's records show Lane had 3 drug convictions dating back to 1996. The man who wrote the book upon which the TV movie was based said Lane was a victim of the same type of violence portrayed in the movie.
Sad story. A very sad story.
And sort of closer to home, I think people should recognize. I guess another big story was that in Pakistan, Pakistan is dismissing a report that was in yesterday's Christian Science Monitor that bin Laden escaped from Tora Bora and into Pakistan with the help of local tribesmen. And that basically he just got out of town, got out of Dodge, and who knows where he'll turn up next. And the white supremacist out in Long Island, Ryan Wagner, was convicted by a Long Island jury of attempted murder, assault, and aggravated harassment, and could face up to 50 years in prison. Wagner, and along with another man, was convicted for the attempted murders of 2 Mexican day laborers they picked up at a day labor pickup spot and then proceeded to beat and stab.
Something like that Wendy's murder, that is, it goes to the core of, you know, my being, that really both is just such a sadness and infuriation at the same time of killing people who are making pennies anyway, get crapped on, and you go out there and murder them is like the World Trade Center. You put a line where you say, look, whatever the message is, you can't get over that kind of violence, that kind of Yeah, some people call it evil, but really.
It's beyond that. It's hopelessness, and it's people who feel, you know, and of course people are going to say, oh, you're such a lily-livered, bleeding-heart liberal, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it is the conditions that people are in, and they are, ultimately people are responsible for their own actions and have to, you know, be punished or pay the price. But I wonder, does this society, does this government really, you know, and it applies to Osama bin Laden as well, have they really, you know, had the right to punish anybody, to hold anybody guilty of a crime, a mass murder, or murder, after,
you know,
all the things they've
Paul,
done?
Paul, I'm glad you said that, and, you know, because I'm with you, you know that I'm not a bleeding heart liberal, too, and you have to understand where they were coming in from, and that's a good point you make, especially the guys at Wendy's. Could there have been a more horrible childhood that these both had? You know, desperate, sad, really. Come on, I know what you're saying, but you're right. That doesn't justify what was done, and also...
it's just who can do the punishing and how should people be punished. You know,
no, but it's also about looking at what brought them there to the first place, which is a great deal, I think, in essence of what you're talking about, that we need to do, not just take the crime as some kind of aberration. And, you know, that's a great point.
And we have to deal with that. And we have a political leader, newly minted and elected, who can deal with these such simple questions. How do we deal with crime in the ghetto and poor people and all these situations?
And we'll give him a proper introduction,
I'm sure,
as a matter of fact.
He's coming with his solutions.
And we'll give him a proper introduction because John Blue is entering our studios as we speak, but we're not going to bring him on yet until we give him the proper respect and introduction that he deserves. He is the first Asian American to be in our city council, if you can believe that. And Paul, you're welcome to join me here as we talk to John. John, as a matter of fact, I think took our advice and took public transportation over there, but I don't know. We'll ask him about that. 8:16 in the morning. This is WBAI This Morning. And what day is it? Is it? It's Thursday, December 13th, 2001. And Paul told us it was 47 degrees, and it is in New York a bit drizzly. Going to take a break now on the show, and we'll be right back again with John Blue. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Gil Scott here, an unknown bluesologist, speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. Stay here.
This radio hasn't been working very well the past 2 days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you. I wonder whatever became of me.
Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoon at 3.
That should be time for our favorite program.
Here on WBAI.
I should have been back here a long time ago.
Saturday afternoon at 3.
You would be getting in Albania.
What would you do if I went off the air?
It is 8:21 in the morning, and thank you for joining us. This is WBAI This Morning. We've been here since 7:30 in the morning. We're here every morning, Monday through Friday, from 7:30 until 10 in the morning. My name is Santiago Nieves. This is Pacifica Radio in New York. Again, WBAI, we're at 99.5 FM. You can also listen to WBAI if you're not within our broadcast area. On the Internet, log on to www.wbai.org. Again, that's wbai.org. Our email address, if you'd like to email us with comments or any questions, is WBAI This Morning, all three words together, WBAI This Morning at AOL.com. 8:22 in the morning, pardon me, and it is 47 degrees in New York. My name is Santiago Nieves, and it is my pleasure to introduce to you John Liu, the first Asian American City Council member, newly elected City Council member elect. John Liu, welcome to the studios of WBAI.
Good morning, Santiago. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much for taking us up on the invitation. By the way, did you come by subway today?
Oh, of course I did.
Okay, but in all fairness, you didn't take our advice. You were coming by subway anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am, if they had frequent traveler programs on the subway, I'd be able to take my wife on many vacations.
Does that mean we're going to see John, a guy who's not going to go around in limos and stuff like that?
Well, I don't have a limo. Do you have one for me?
Well, doesn't it come with the package? Speaking of which, what does come with the package when you're a new city council member? Come on, all the perks.
The greatest perk of being elected to the city council is being able to work with a terrific bunch of people. I have met almost every single member of the city council, incoming as well as veteran, and I tell you, it is an impressive bunch. Everyone other than me, of course, but it's an impressive bunch. I'm looking very much forward to working with these people. I think that this is a challenging time for our city, and you couldn't have picked a better bunch to get us through this.
Speaking of a better bunch, you represent now the Councilmanic District, the 20th in Queens, includes Flushing and Flushing Meadows, Auburndale, and Whitestone. That's pretty diverse territory out there.
We have people from all over the world. We have many Asian Americans, Latinos, African Americans, and various white groups. It's a great place.
What were your numbers, by the way? Weren't you around 55%?
Yeah, that you've got them right. I had a competitive primary as well as a general election.
Yeah,
and you know what? I mean, throughout the city, with term limits and with campaign finance leveling the playing field, we had competitive elections all over the city, and that really is the best result of democracy. That in the end, people do choose the right people to represent them in government.
Speaking of democracy, one of the things that brought a great many new council members there, yourself, is the whole issue of term limits. What about the issue of democracy around term limits? Are you for term limits, against term limits?
I have to say that conceptually I am against term limits. I think that the way the system was implemented was extremely arbitrary. To cut it off at 2 years, no staggering of when people's terms expire. Conceptually, I am against term limits, but the fact is it is very difficult for challengers and newcomers to beat incumbents. So there's probably some merit in some kind of a compromise system. Right now, I believe the system is probably not optimal for the long term.
Well, Councilman, I pretty much agree down to the line as you feel around this issue, and I guess it's an honest way to go. What happens if term limits kick you out when you don't want to, though? We saw many city council members turn 180, some so fast it was almost 360. Did someone say Peter Vallone, who is for and against term limits? Is that going to happen with you?
You know, Santiago, I am actually not a politician. I majored in mathematical physics in school, and I'm a manager of Pricewaterhouse.
Right, right.
I will go back to my career at the end of my tenure. 8 years, I believe, is a very long time. I'm 34 years old. I've never been anywhere for 8 years.
You know, some people. Let me bring that up and you brought that up as a plus, and certainly Mike Bloomberg wouldn't be unhappy at the fact that you were with Pricewaterhouse and has that kind of background and is now serving the city. There's no contradiction with him. But perhaps the same question that was asked of Mike Bloomberg, you do come from a money background, that kind of thing. You just said that you could go back to that. Then why is it so important to be a city council member representing people, and how much of that is going to be important to you?
Well, I have the honor of representing an area that I call my hometown. I've lived in the area, grew up there pretty much my whole life since I was 5 years old. Over the last couple of decades, I have seen so many changes, many for the good, some that were less desirable, and it's time to give something back. I want to take this opportunity to do as much as I can to improve the area and to make it a good place for my wife and I to raise our family, which is what we're doing.
You had at least three rivals, or three, right? Republican Walsh, someone from the Green Party, mm-hmm. I don't know who that candidate was, and a Flores from the Independent Party, a Latino.
Right.
You want to talk about any of your challengers?
Well, I think they certainly put their heart and effort into the race, and I commend them for that. I think, you know, it was a tough election, but the election's over, and we're moving on now. And there's a great deal of work to be done for the community.
You know, Mike Bloomberg, I use him only because he's the most visible signal of going out and reaching out to entities that Mayor Giuliani had thrown out the door. What kind of person are you going to be? You, as you said yourself, represent a very diverse community, African-Americans, Latinos. You said it all yourself. What are you going to do to reach out to them? And not only reach out, they're your constituents now, to represent their points of view.
Well, I've been working with everybody in the community for years now, and certainly during the campaign, the main theme behind my bid for city council was the fact that the truism that people have a great deal more in common than in difference, and we should stop focusing on all the differences we have. I think we should be proud of our cultural backgrounds and where we came from. But the fact is, I spoke to people all over the area that I will now represent and ask them what their top concerns were. And the top concerns, by and large, were our public schools, making sure we have safe neighborhoods, resources for our senior citizens, and youth activities, quality of life issues. It didn't really matter where you or your parents or your grandparents came from. The top issues were pretty much the same for all people. And that's exactly the way I plan to represent my district down at City Hall.
Do you consider your community working poor, working class, middle upper class, or lower middle class?
My district is diverse not only in ethnicity and race, but also in, I guess, socioeconomic status, as well as age. It's an extremely diverse community on several different dimensions.
Making your challenge even more so, and might want, you want to talk to that, to those who, your own admission now, don't have the same. There is a disparity that is in your community, as there is a great deal throughout the city.
I don't think there's a disparity. I think diversity is a better word to describe the community. And people do work together. Flushing has a 400-year history of being the center of tolerance. It's actually where hundreds of years ago a group called the Quakers were being persecuted against by the governor of New York back then, and a very prominent citizen in Flushing took a stand. And out of that came the Flushing Remonstrance, which is a historic document that is still kept in Queens.
You just mentioned the budget, and I did want to talk to you about the budget and give you an opportunity to talk about that. I asked our guest yesterday, Mr. Barron, Charles Barron, about it, and he felt it was, of course, an integral part to what his agenda is now, particularly after the September 11th tragedy, which we are, I think, in the midst of a recession here, in very desperate straits. We have had people from the experts on the economy talk about the unemployment rate and how dire it is right now. How do you see the $20 billion that's coming into the city and that is supposed to be coming in? Is that something the city council is going to help out with? And just tell me what you see your role as a respective individual city council member and how you see the whole body responding to the whole issue of the budget, again, within the context of September 11th.
Well, first, I'm delighted to hear that Charles Barron, my friend and colleague, was here yesterday. The budget is going to be a tremendous challenge for us to get through. Obviously, we've got a very large budget. I think we're the fourth largest in the country after the federal government, the state of California, and the state of New York. But we do have a large budget. And there's a great deal of money. We're talking about $40 billion. It will be cut next year just because our budget and revenues will be lower. But that's still a great deal of money for 8 million people. I think a great challenge that the city council and the mayor will have will be to reprioritize some of the budget items. And, you know, obviously public schools we need a recommitment to. But all of this in light of September 11th, September 11th was a horrible, horrible tragedy our city has gone through, our country has gone through. Right after the tragedies, though, the president got on the air and promised to send over $20 billion. We haven't seen much of that yet. So certainly in the city council, I know myself and many of my colleagues in city and state government will be pressuring the federal government to come through with what they've promised. After all, the attacks weren't against the people or the city of New York. They were against our country, and the federal government needs to step in as they promised, as the president promised. I certainly will be fighting very hard for that money. We need it. We need it to rebuild New York. But long term, going forward, even before September 11th, we were starting to experience an economic downturn. And that certainly is going to, again, force us to rethink what is most important in this city. And obviously, public schools needs to become part of the top of the agenda again.
I was just going to ask you, and you, I guess you're getting into it already, which is what do you see as the three, four, five, whatever major issues, what I call front burner issues, to your constituents, and also is it in any way different from what should be for the rest of the city of New York? It is 8:33 in the morning and 46 degrees. My guest continues to be City Council Member-elect John Liu, the first Asian to be elected to the City Council.
As I mentioned, the public schools really need to be put back at the top of the city's priorities. Where, you know, we have the best public schools in the country. The news media often focuses on some of the worst and some of the failing schools that we have. And sure, we do have a lot of schools that need a tremendous amount of help. But the fact is, we also have the best. And to me, that proves to us that we cannot abandon our system of public schools. So when it comes time to try things like vouchers and charter schools, I don't think we have enough resources to do that yet. We really need to keep every single dollar, every single penny within our public schools.
But you're not against, just sticking this in, but you're not against an element of privatization in the...
I am against any kind of element of privatization of our school system. I'm not against private schools. We've got some great private schools also. But the fact is, people, you know, parents choose to send their kids there. Our government, our city government, and certainly the state government has a responsibility to provide education to every school child that needs it.
Go right ahead. We were talking about education. I asked you about the front burner issues. What do you feel they are? I believe you mentioned housing before. If you could, in fact, mention the three, four things you felt that really absolutely essential.
Sure. Housing, public safety, and transportation infrastructure. Housing, obviously, rents have skyrocketed over the last decade. People are being priced out of New York, and it's something that we need to do something about, just because people who have lived in New York and people who have even lived in my area, Flushing, for decades, are finding that they no longer can afford to live where they've always lived. And that's a big problem. It causes our neighborhoods to be unstable. We as a city need to invest the money in creating more affordable housing. And at the same time, we need to look at ways that will make it easier for our private builders to create affordable housing. I think, unfortunately, a lot of the new development is on the high-end side. We need to try to streamline the processes and the bureaucracies that the builders need to get through to build affordable housing.
What did you think of Mayor Giuliani?
Let's talk about Mayor-elect Bloomberg.
Let's talk about Mayor Giuliani before we talk about Bloomberg. Let's make a deal. If we talk about Giuliani now, we'll talk about... But I'm beginning to feel, since your response was that somehow you might feel that it would anger me or something if you felt that he was doing a good job. But don't. Tell us if you felt he...
Mayor Giuliani has been our chief executive for 8 years. And, you know, to some extent, he has done a very good job. But I think that not the entire city has benefited under his stewardship. You know, the crime reduction, the increasing revenues to the city, yeah, that had to do with nationwide trends for the large part. I mean, I guess, you know, part of his leadership and his work with the police department may have contributed to that. But the fact is, we were experiencing a reduction in crime all over the country. The economy of the entire United States was upward bound, and so we benefited a great deal from that. Now you look at the tenure of Mayor Dinkins, who preceded Giuliani. Dinkins was constantly facing budget cuts. And I tell you, it's a lot easier to keep everybody happy when you don't have to cut people's budgets.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. We here at WBAI on our morning show back then had a special from the Rotunda of City Hall with Mayor Dinkins on the whole issue of the budget cuts and how it devastated the city. And I'm glad you're giving some context to it. But Rudy Giuliani, but he won't leave, John. There is nothing we could do to get rid of Rudy Giuliani. I mean, he's like a bad penny.
Rudy Giuliani is a great New Yorker. I'm not saying we have to get rid of him. He's not going to be mayor anymore. Let's talk about Mayor-elect Bloomberg, who I think is a great guy.
I don't know whether he's not going to be mayor anymore. I don't think he knows it either, but right into Mike Bloomberg, of course. What is your relationship, in fact, with Mayor-elect Mike Bloomberg? You think he's making all the right moves? You assess it for me.
I think he has. First, let me just say that I have been appointed to his elected officials advisory board. It's a group of 24 elected officials throughout the city, mostly Republican, but a number of Democrats such as myself. And I did not support Bloomberg in the mayor's race. I'm a Democrat, always have been, and certainly I was somewhat turned off by the amount of money that was being thrown around. But the fact is, right after the election, he did make, I believe, the right moves in terms of reaching out right away to teachers, the healthcare workers, a lot of people, myself included, who did not support him in the election. And in this kind of time where we really need all New Yorkers to be together, I think that's a tremendous asset to have as a personal quality.
You mentioned support. You didn't support or vote for Mike Bloomberg. With all due respect, who did you vote for support?
I supported and voted for Mark Green in the general election.
And why Mark Green over Fair?
Oh, in the general election.
Or Bloomberg, for that matter, but you kind of explained that. In the general election, yeah.
Right.
I think it's a good question. You are the first Asian American. They said that ultimately we're talking about in part empowerment. Mm-hmm. Ferrer was supposed to be the great Latino hope. So I thought you.
Well, I didn't vote for Ferrer.
Oh, you're good. Right.
I said I voted for Mark Green in the general election.
Right.
And that was an exciting general election. It was a very close election. Most elections in the city aren't that close.
I don't want to be coy with you, but I just wanted to ask you about the whole mayoral thing, and I really wanted your take on it. Of course, you heard about the flyer and the whole controversy that happened. It pretty seems to me that Mark Green is persona non grata now with the Democratic Party. How do you feel about that?
You know, I think that the most important thing for us to focus on, because the election is over, there's so much work to be done, but we do have a very important upcoming governor's race, and I believe in the Democratic Party. Every single Democrat needs to be vigilant about the whole race issue. We are the party of inclusion. We don't have to fake it. But let's make sure that we stay that way, and I myself. And I encourage every Democrat in the state of New York to do this, to really make every effort to make sure that the primary next year, if there is a primary, doesn't turn out to be another racially divisive event.
Do you think that might go that route, at least to some extent, on the governor's race between Colm McCall and Mr. Cuomo?
I'm optimistic that it won't. We have a new state chair. Judith Hope did a good job. Now we have Denny Farrell. He's coming in. I think he's going to be – he is very well positioned to make sure that doesn't happen. I am certainly happy to help in any way.
I agree with you. He is indeed very well positioned, a man who has had a great deal of experience with the Democratic Party. But, you know, I think Judith Hope basically left because of this horrific mishmash that's happening now. He really has to work hard at getting – this party together. What's your take? Have you talked to other city council members on this issue, Democrats?
I have not, Santiago, uh-huh. and that's because, as I said before, it's important to look forward.
Speaking of looking forward, it is 8:42 in the morning. I'm going to give both of us a very short break, and then we'll be right back. You continue listening to WBAI This Morning. We're Pacifica Radio in New York at 99.5 FM. Again, 8:42. Get going, unless you're at work already. 45 degrees. Gridlock out there, so take public transportation. I continue with my very special in-studio guest, the first Asian American elected to the City Council, John Liu. Stay with us.
WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
On Wall Street.
Look sharp today, boys, especially your rookies. Next money index was up to 90 points last night. We expect heavy capital buying in the opening. Firm has 20,000 deals for sale, then you make close 350,000 before convenience. Get on the horn with your institution, on report on their appetite. As long as your tools are on top priority today. Okay, let's go to work.
Concerned about the humanitarian costs of the war in Afghanistan? Wishing you knew more about Afghan history and culture? Then join us on Saturday for Afghanistan Today and Tomorrow, an evening to benefit the Afghan refugees at Grace Church, 254 Hicks Street near Jerolliman in Brooklyn Heights. The program starts at 5 p.m. with a slideshow on daily life in Afghanistan 2001. At 6, a panel report on conditions in the refugee camps and discussion of Afghanistan's potential reconstruction. At 8 p.m., a special concert featuring Efendi, music of the Middle East, Afghan poetry, master rubab player Qureshi, and others. That's Saturday the 15th at Grace Church in Brooklyn Heights. For more information, you can call 718-832-8815. That's 718-832-8815. This has been a public service announcement from WBAI on behalf of the Center for Economic and Social Rights, a non-for-profit organization.
Joining us again, 8:46 in the morning. It is 46 degrees in New York, a little bit drizzly at 8:55. Paul will be here with the news, and at 9:55 again with our out-the-door news and weather. I'm your host, Santiago Nieves, on this WBAI This Morning edition for Thursday, December 13th, 2001. It is 8:46 in the morning, and my guest continues to be the new city council member, John Lou First, Asian American. John, you're going to hear that a lot, connected to when people introduce you, I guess, huh?
Yes, and it's great. I didn't run to become the first Asian American. I ran to represent my hometown of Flushing. But the fact is, I am the first Asian American. I'm very proud to be that.
Somehow I'm proud as well, and frankly rather shocked, as I told you off the air, and I just told Paul on the air, when I read that you were the first Asian American, and I've been covering the city council, just for a moment I flinched and said, no, there are no other Asian American. And what are the numbers here in New York for Asian Americans? I think it's rather shameful, frankly, that we have... And I guess you're delighted that you're representing at least a part of that community, but mm-hmm. I thought we'd have more Asian Americans in the city council.
Well, we will. Asian Americans
Asian
Americans make up 10%, a little over 10% of the population of the New York City. That's 800,000 to close to a million people. And I think that in the long run, certainly the city council needs to be reflective of everybody in the city. And it is, as you mentioned, Santiago, it is hard to believe that there hasn't ever been an Asian American elected to the New York City Council. I, in many ways, wish that I was the 9th or the 10th. The fact is I'm the first, and so there's a great deal of work to be done, not only in my home community, but throughout the city in terms of being a voice for Asian Americans.
Let me tell people at 8:48 that you are welcome to come back. I understand, actually, that you have to rush off. You're doing a television interview.
Yes, a little later.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so we will invite you again next week to join us again, and I understand you'll be coming back, and maybe we can take some listener calls.
I'd be delighted to. In fact, I love taking listener calls.
You sound like you do, and we're going to get you a radio show right over here at 8:48. Speaking of which, you know, Mark Green had a radio show on this air for years.
Okay, yeah. I think I was aware of that.
Anyway, talk to us about your being Asian. We keep saying Asian. What part of the world are your parents from? Are you second generation? Tell us about yourself and your family, John.
Santiago, I am Asian. I have been Asian all my life.
That's not what I heard. I heard you were Jewish.
I was born in Taiwan, and my family and I immigrated here to Flushing, New York. when I was 5 years old, and I've been in the area pretty much ever since. My family were very close. I've got two younger brothers, and they're both right now out in California. But my parents are still, they live a little bit outside Flushing, but they work in Flushing now. And my wife and I, we have our home in Flushing. We've got a little baby boy. He's 13 months.
Good for you.
Growing
congratulations.
Very quickly. Thank you.
That's sweet. That's nice. Listen, unfortunately, this part is also about family, and I thought you'd respond because our listeners would certainly say, how is it you didn't ask him? You know that part of the campaign was a little bit of ugly stuff, saying that your dad, in fact, was responsible for some bank misappropriation, among other things, and I thought you might want to respond to that because, as you know, it was a part of the campaign.
Well,
I believe you said at that point it was an effort to smear you, but you define that for us.
Well, you know, the election was competitive, and my opponents, not all of them, but one or two of them were willing to, I guess, throw mud. My dad was charged, and, you know, obviously he has never done anything wrong. He is the most honest, upstanding man that I have ever known, and in the end, everything will work out. But the fact is, in a campaign like this, where I have one or two opponents who really aren't willing to say anything, they brought it out. And that's fine. I mean, that's part of the American electoral process.
This might not be a question one would think for a city council member, but after all, John, you took the subway here. You know that we're a mere maybe eight blocks from what is called Ground Zero.
Yes.
Here. You are the new city council member, the first Asian American. I'm really interested in your giving us your take on the World Trade Center, that event, what it means to you as a new city council member. You put it in the right context for me. How do you feel about all this?
I still can't believe that the World Trade Center towers are not there. I was, I think many of us were involved in the primary on September 11th, and I was in fact standing in front of one of the poll sites when I heard the news, and it was just unbelievable. I went home and just to make sure everybody was all right, and just from that point on, stayed glued to the TV. It was like an awful nightmare that was happening. In the aftermath of September 11th, we did talk about the financial challenges that we have. You know, I think it's also important to talk about the social challenges. We're waging war in the world right now as a country, but there are fights to be fought right here too. Fights to make sure that our city and our communities are kept safe and free from terror. But I think it's also important that you know we keep the freedom that we're fighting for, and some of the things that are happening in this city and in this country disturb me because we're fighting for this freedom, and at the same time, in many ways, our freedom is curtailed. And it's curtailed in a way that I think is extremely unjust. I think the level of racial profiling that is now being tolerated is just unbelievable to me. I'm at a loss for words every time I see something else on the news where there's another restriction or more... I don't even know what the exact terms are, but the fact is people are being profiled based on the way they look, based on the way they speak, and based on the way they dress, and I think that's wrong. Obviously, we do need to have increased security procedures, but not at the loss of the freedom that we're supposed to be fighting for.
Well, those are interesting words, and I hope to follow up on a great deal of that, including his choice of Ray Kelly and what your... apparently you're going to include the whole issue of racial profiling and the issue of police abuse and the relationship with our communities.
I was talking more on a national level of what President Bush and his administration and the Attorney General has been saying and doing over the last couple of months. I was not referring to Mayor-elect Bloomberg at all.
Yes,
but we will see
exactly
what his administration how his administration will handle these problems.
Yes, I knew you were talking about it on a national level, but here we are in New York and in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Some people feel the home of racial profiling, New Jersey, and recently Governor-elect Jim McGreevy was on to talk around that issue again, considering it the, one of the most important things. Is that one of the most important things as an Asian American, you think, police relationship with New Yorkers?
Well, I was speaking from the point of view of just viewing all of the events in the aftermath of September 11th.
Right.
I think police-community relations are important. I think that, you know, we do need to build support between the community and the police in order for the community to feel safe and for the police to do their jobs.
All right, John Liu, a real pleasure, man. Great to meet you. Thank you for coming to the studios, and I really look forward to next week. You're a good radio person.
Thank you.
All right, John, thanks a lot. John Liu, first Asian American elected to the city council. 8:54 in the morning. This is WBAI This Morning at 99.5 FM. Paul is here, and we have the news at 8:55 in the morning. Paul will also be back at 9:55 with our Out the Door. Councilman, thanks again. 8:55 in the morning, and it is 45 degrees. Paul DiRienzo, it is all yours, sir.
Thank you, Santiago. The Commerce Department says retail sales plunged a record 3.7% last month, with consumers worried about the ailing economy. At the same time, the government says jobless claims showed a huge drop early this month, suggesting the labor market is beginning to recover. The Pentagon's ready to release that still-secret videotape of Osama bin Laden today. Once a team of translators finishes up a transcript of the hour-long tape, U.S. officials say the tape proves bin Laden masterminded the September terror attacks. Tribal fighters in United States planes have renewed their assault against the Al-Qaeda cave complex in eastern Afghanistan, even as they suggest that key leaders of the terror network have fled the mountain base. A second surrender plan fell through earlier today. A group of injured Arab fighters in Afghanistan say they'll blow themselves up if anyone other than medical staffers enters their Kandahar hospital room. The desperate patients are suspected of being linked to Osama bin Laden's network. While Israel may have cut its ties with Yasser Arafat, a United States diplomat says Washington will continue to work with the Palestinian leader. Israel ended all contact with Arafat and launched retaliatory airstrikes after a bus ambush yesterday killed 10 Israelis. A terror suspect in the United States is getting more legal aid. French lawyer Isabelle Coutant-Payer says she'll defend Zacharias Moussaoui's rights as a French citizen. She's the fiancée of the imprisoned terrorist known as Carlos the Jackal. Moussaoui faces conspiracy charges in the first indictment directly linked to the September suicide hijackings. He already has a lawyer in America. 2 months ago, Coutant-Payer announced she would marry Carlos the Jackal, whose real name is Ilich Ramirez Sanchez. He's serving a life sentence in France for the 1975 murders of two French secret agents and an alleged informer. Coutant-Payer suggests Moussaoui has been made a scapegoat to the investigation. She's not yet spoken with her client, nor does she know where he's being held. The lawyer says Moussaoui's mother asked her to represent her son. Two men arrested with box cutters the day after the September 11th terror attacks are no longer believed to be tied to terrorism. A law enforcement source says federal investigators no longer think Ayub Ali Khan and Mohammed Jawed Azmat are involved in terrorism. Khan and Azmat have been held on material witness warrants since their arrest on an Amtrak train in Texas. They remain jailed in New York. Khan's lawyer says investigators spent 40 hours interrogating his client, but they could not link him to terrorism. He says Khan is expected to appear in federal court today to face a credit card fraud charge. An Afghan painter has saved many art treasures from being destroyed by the Taliban. Mohammed Asefi, a medical doctor by trade, says that after he saw the Taliban destroy hundreds of works at Kabul's National Gallery, he took it upon himself to do something. He says he offered to repair around 80 paintings and then took them to his studio to work on them. Under the Taliban, depictions of people and animals and art were banned as un-Islamic. Asefi says he painted over the offending images to disguise them with watercolors so they could not be destroyed. Today at the National Gallery, Asefi wiped off his handiwork showing the original pictures as they were meant to be. The alleged chairman of the Militant Jewish Defense League and a follower have been arrested on suspicion of plotting to blow up a Los Angeles mosque in the office of an Arab American congressman. The Federal Bureau of Investigation closed in on the two suspects after one of the suspects received a shipment of explosive powder at his home. More on the story from WBAI's Ginger Otis.
Irvin David Rubin, alleged to be the head of the Jewish Defense League, and Earl Leslie Krugel, alleged to be a leading member of the Jewish Defense League, were arrested last night and charged this morning in U.S. District Court with two federal crimes: conspiring to destroy a building with an explosive device and possessing a destructive device in connection with a crime of violence. The charges are a result of an FBI investigation that reportedly discovered the two suspects were conspiring to construct a bomb to blow up a building housing an Islamic or Arab American political and religious group. The defendants apparently had a list of other potential targets that included the Muslim Public Affairs Council in Los Angeles, the King Fahd Mosque in Culver City, and the offices of United States Congressman Daryl Issa. U.S. Attorney John S. Gordon announced the arrests today.
The bombing plot developed to the point that explosive powder was delivered to Krugel's house last night. At the time the powder was delivered, Krugel had in his house the remaining components needed to make the bomb. All of the bomb components were seized during the execution of a search warrant.